Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. And for over 15 years, Jason Martell has been one of the leading researchers and lecturers specializing in ancient advanced technologies. And today, he's working on his next scientific recreation of ancient technology based upon data obtained from Sumerian cuneiform cylinder seals from 3000 BC. He is also planning several research international expeditions, which will focus on gaining access to those ancient Sumerian artifacts and other archaeological relics not currently accessible to the public. His book, of course, is Knowledge Apocalypse. DVD is The Lost Cycle of Time. His website is xfacts.com, and his TV series is Ancient Aliens. I'd like to welcome back to Coast, Mr. Jason Martell. Jason, good morning.
Hey, Jimmy, thanks so much for having me back on your show.
It's my show. It's your show. But we got to be very careful with that. Now, Jason, Ancient Aliens is now on their 100th season. And did you ever think in a million years that you would be talking about it on Coast to Coast in the summer of 2018 about the next season of Ancient Aliens?
I probably did not expect it to be around the topic of a TV show called Ancient Aliens, simply because the track record of shows like this before Ancient Aliens were always handled by the networks as a very balanced approach, where they would have, you know, researchers like us, and then they would sprinkle in skeptics and people that would refute everything you say. So at the end of the episode or the end of the show, the watchers kind of left feeling neutral, like, well, everything you said sounded interesting, but then you refuted it. So I don't know what to believe. Ancient Aliens was the first to stand out amongst all of those network shows and say, no, we'll just go 100% full bore Ancient Aliens and let the user decide. And so that seems to have been the right decision, because as you eloquently said, now over 100 episodes later, the show is still going.
I think I said 100 seasons, but, you know, same thing. Same thing. And now, also, in my opening little rant tonight here on Coast, I said that you live two lives. And you do. You live two lives. You are a successful internet startup, a software developer, company owner, all of that stuff. And then you have this other foot firmly planted in ancient technology and its research. But your passion is the research, but you don't have to do it. You don't have to appear on Ancient Aliens. This isn't your career. You do it because you want to get the knowledge back out to the community.
Yeah, it's been a personal hobby and choice, Jimmy, for many years now, to support this line of research. But it's also been, very fulfilling to carry this torch and to uphold these topics that we've all had very close to us and had, sincere feelings around. And sometimes it's kind of a fun vindication, too, around things that play out. Recently with NASA just releasing organic matter found on Mars.
Right.
Well, great. We've known that probably for at least 20 years that there's things up there. And so some of these topics that we talk about, which we'll discuss tonight, but one of those being Mars, it's funny that the show Ancient Aliens, or these topics, ancient astronaut theory, continue to butt heads against the cutting edge, most current topics in science. And the scales always tilt to the ancient alien side as far as not only interest, popular demand, but the science.
Well, how do we differentiate today? I can understand why ancient man would be confused, but today, how do we answer the question? Was it aliens or was it gods? Or exactly what was visiting and where did the knowledge come from?
Well, I think that's still going to be our challenge question over the next decade or so. But really, it's the evidence, Jimmy. And so for me, what's been fascinating is, looking at topics like Mars, where it's, currently in the news, and everyone's like, oh, wow, look, they found some type of organic matter on Mars. What does that mean? Past organic matter, current, are there things hopping around with their head? So what's interesting is to shed light into those topics with our knowledge and explain to people that, well, look, at the reason why there's an interest in Mars is maybe you didn't know that they found, you know, like 25 years ago, an area called Cydonia, and that many of these objects are possibly artificial. Now, what's interesting is that even your audience, Jimmy, even the top ufologists that are freelance and, you know, into these topics and such, some of the history around things like Mars reveal that it's off of researchers like us that are going into the field and discovering these objects. So as an example, everyone's familiar with Cydonia. Everyone's familiar with the face on Mars. But you might also have heard that there are other objects in the area, some of those called the Tholus, one of them called the City. And there are actually large pyramidal structures in the area, the D&M Pyramid, various city structures where they have a pyramid also located there. So one of those objects, as an example, as I just mentioned, the D&M Pyramid, that name comes from the two gentlemen, Vincent DiPietro and Greg Molinar, D&M, based on their last names, who went through NASA archives and found several shots of this five-sided pyramid. And now even today, right, we refer to it as the D&M Pyramid. So it is people like us, Jimmy, like, you know, just normal, might have skills in image processing or in business or in something else, but we apply those skills to this research. And there are discoveries that happen all the time, which we can discuss tonight, that happen from, you know, either freelance or laymen or people that are not being professionally employed, but find these things and flag them to the professional community so they can be further verified.
Well, there are those examples, and I am convinced whenever I've looked at any high-res surface shots of Mars, it just doesn't look natural. That's the thing. There are too many objects in the background that if I was starving or lack of water and I'm walking across the surface of Mars, I can see objects that I need to walk to because it looks like a structure. It looks like something is there and is built. I think the evidence is really clear. I do want to talk about that same research that is applied here, not only through Walter Cruttenden and yourself, but other researchers that have verified the precession, that time scale of 26,000 years and how that relates to the cycles of time going through today. And what is most important about the revealing of this fact is that it takes 2,000 years of constant measuring to even figure out a couple of degrees of movements in the precession. Clearly, the ancients knew about this, and it's in many calendars and is documented. How is it possible that ancient cultures knew about this wobble on planet Earth that goes full cycle every 26,500 years? Somebody was sharing that knowledge.
You've got the right idea, Jimmy, and we can jump right into those topics like the lost cycle of time, which is really the crux of my research, and it spiders into many other topics around how we analyze cultures now that have existed for thousands of years, monuments that have existed for thousands of years. So some of those tools that are fun for us to share with your audience really don't require, again, a heap of science. They just require knowledge and constructive thinking. So right now, a lot of the things that we'll do in the ancient astronaut theory combine various fields of research so that we can conclude something based on evidence that exists but hasn't been put under the same light. As an example, you know, we have monuments all over the Earth. And as you were mentioning with astronomy and such, there are megalithic monuments all over the Earth that have also alignments to star constellations, to various points on the Earth. And so some of these sites and locations, we can see that there's an astronomical alignment. So, for instance, Giza, we know that the three pyramids of Giza are forming a terrestrial map of Orion, and so that somehow, in the year 10,500 BC, the pyramids are forming a terrestrial map of Orion, the Sphinxes are looking directly east into the constellation of Leo. So somehow, regardless of when the pyramids were actually built, 2500 BC or probably way earlier. They do align at 10,500 BC to monuments, points in the sky. So using that as a reference, Jimmy, you know, we can also deduce other things like geological change. So we have astronomical points, monuments aligned to a star constellation. Then we also have geological change. So another example would be, if you look at the Nile on the Google Maps of today, you'll see that the Nile River crosses the Nile, the Giza Plateau there, and meanders very far away from the pyramids. Now, supposedly in 2500 BC, or in that realm of the pharaohs, going back a few thousand years even, the pyramids were right up against the Nile. And in theory, you know, you'd see a pharaoh walking down the banks of the pyramid and would be at the foot of the Nile.
Right.
That's not possible today because of the geological change of how long it's taken the Nile to meander away from the pyramid. So those types of change, even Lake Titicaca, sites like Teotihuacan or Machu Picchu, yes, they might seem remote now at 13,000 feet in the mountains, but 5,000 years ago, it appears they were at the foot of a river, the foot of a lake like Lake Titicaca. So a lot of these sites are interesting, Jimmy, to realize that we can see astronomical alignments, but the geological change also gives us a time reference that might be more accurate.
And define knowledge apocalypse as we start to talk about all of this.
Right. Well, you know, knowledge apocalypse, thank you, was just a name I chose around the book that I released around my research. And apocalypse mainly just being an unveiling of knowledge. Everyone thinks apocalypse is something blowing up. It's really just blowing up knowledge. It's a revealing of information and things that are there, but hadn't reached the surface. And so that's really what a lot of our research is. I mean, there's all these facts lying around, and they just need to be grouped together to support the right mind frame or idea. And so that's really been a fun thing for us, is the ancient astronaut theory, the idea that all these ancient cultures, even religions and such, are rooted in something that has influenced man that came down from the heavens. There was knowledge happening of things happening in the skies, even beyond, but man documented that there were beings like us they were interacting with. They always came down from the skies. So at that root question, are we talking about mythological beings, aliens, angels? It becomes a very fun topic, again, to analyze the historical data and combine it with the science that we have, even in limited form today, to try and answer those type of topics.
Well, I don't think the science is that limited anymore, in that we have fast radio bursts, we have binary star systems, we have exoplanets. Today it was announced in the Journal of Modern Psychology that parapsychology is real, right? And I'll talk about that after the break. But we have all of that. Then we have quantum physics, and we have Göbekli Tepe and quantum mechanics and the Giza pyramid. Everything is leaning in one direction, and I've got the feeling that the dam is about to burst. I think we're getting close.
I sure hope so. I mean, you know, we talk a lot about how these type of topics affect our current culture, our future, and I won't say a slippery slope, but it's definitely a hard path to navigate the terms of ufology and predicting where this will go. All of us have the right, I think, insight to saying that, you know, we want a positive outcome and the future looks bright, and I hope so too, because just everything you said, you know, we can focus on the dark side of what we probably know, and it's not being revealed to the public. Or, you know, there's this other side, which is, man, the advances in science and technology, while they're not solely being done in the public sector, there are things that are going to hit the sector, you know, even now. People, if you Google, like, the term Google I/O 2018, Google just released a whole slew of artificial intelligence APIs and technologies for public consumption, mainly for healthcare, to speed up detection of diseases and things that we can, you know, just do so much faster using artificial intelligence. But a lot of these are now becoming, again, just everyday availability to the average developer of technology. So, wow, it really will be interesting to see in hindsight, right? 25 years doesn't sound like a long time. 25 years ago, let's see, I'm 44. Yeah, the internet was just about turning on.
Yeah, right. Well, that is funny. And thank you for letting us all know how old we are. Actually, how I didn't think, Jason, that we would be where we are today with the internet. I didn't think it was going to happen quite that fast. I didn't feel it in 1995 as it was starting to take off. And if you really look at the concepts of our electrical grid, distribution networks, of course, satellites and GPS and phone service, you know, on and on and on, what we deal with the internet today, it wasn't like that in 1995. And just in 23 short years, things really changed quickly. And our knowledge now is accessible that we never clearly had before.
And hopefully in the next 25 years, this next bubble of knowledge will burst, which is what's really happening in outer space, you know, just beyond our atmosphere, in our own solar system. You know, is there life teeming on planets nearby, Mars, Moon? Are there other beings interacting with us and have been living here for probably thousands of years alongside man? You know, these are some pretty heavy topics that within the next 25 years, those answers might become standard knowledge that, yeah, human beings have been occupying the Earth with several other intelligent species for thousands of years.
What?
Those things would be pretty mind-blowing, but people would move past it and move on and go about their life as well if should something like that, you know, become standard norm.
We've got about 25 seconds here. 3 weeks ago, it was announced that octopi, are aliens.
Right?
And those eggs were brought here whole and complete and ready to go. The world didn't freak out on that.
No. I mean, some species in the oceans probably at the time of seeing these, you know, tentacle-based smart beings show up in their ocean. No, you're right, Jimmy. It did not freak out the world. The life continued to move forward.
No, aliens have been here the whole time. And we call it calamari. This is Coast to Coast AM. Our guest is Jason Martell. More on the knowledge apocalypse after this short break. Stay with us. Now, I was just discussing with Jason right before the break this story that just broke, and is telepathy and other seeming superpowers of the mind starting to be more accepted by Orthodox science? In its latest issue, American Psychologist, the official peer-reviewed academic journal of the American Psychological Association, has published a paper that says, and I'm quoting, "Evidence provides cumulative support for the reality of psi, which cannot be readily explained away by the quality of the studies, fraud, selective reporting, experimental or analytical incompetence, or other frequent criticisms." Now, that's a holy smokes moment right there. One of these dominoes falls, they all fall. Our guest is Jason Martell. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest tonight, Jason Martell. And Jason, going back to things like ancient aliens, and the awareness that this community has now, and the expansion has been just off of a Richter scale, getting this knowledge out to others that would never have considered it before. Ancient aliens has a large part to do with that. There are people out there by the millions that have been starving and trying to find out what is going on. Ancient Aliens has been instrumental with that, and you've been with it since the beginning.
I'm very grateful to be a part of the show since literally episode one. Giorgio being, you know, a very good friend to you as well as me, you know, invited me on the show, you know, from its inception. So I agree with you that, you know, the show has been a avenue allowing people to not only be introduced to these topics, but also explore them of, you know, in their own interest level. But I also think that, you know, shows like, we hear the term ancient aliens and it's already has a caveat towards extraterrestrial. When in fact, most of the show's topics, while they might hint at the idea that there was influence beyond humanity's own inception, what I really give credit to the show to, excuse me, it's just opening someone's mind, you know, to these topics. And, you know, while my own line or vein of research isn't necessarily to promote extraterrestrials, shows like Ancient Aliens allow what I would like to discuss to be a perfect avenue and an audience that is thirsty for that type of information. And a lot of that has to do with ancient knowledge, where we can look into the past.
You okay?
And see a wealth of information that we can apply today. And so that's really the fun part, Jimmy, is to use the sciences we have available to try and further understand Göbekli Tepe and some of these sites that had to do with tracking precession, as you mentioned. Why were they doing it? How did they benefit from it? So those are some fun topics for us to explore.
Is this an overall falsehood from our educational system and those professionals out there that have been trying to throw us off of the scent, you know, where they probably have been sitting on this knowledge and have looked at this and considered this themselves, but it seems like it's been a deliberate attempt on misdirection?
That's a good point. I mean, I don't look at always as deliberate. It could be in some parts of some parties, but think of it as a puzzle. And so certain parties have some of the pieces. Others have others of those pieces. They know, holy crap, this is a part of the puzzle. I should be careful who I share this with. And so they remain with just that view of part of the puzzle. You could look at this from a religious aspect. We've heard of terms like the Dark Ages, the Golden Age. That puzzle is put together and given us much more clarity by analyzing it by just not through one religious lens or one version of time, but putting it all together. So looking at all of these cultures and having a time period that now exists based on this cycle of time we call precession, which is the ancients watching a cycle of time and tracking it that lasts, you know, around 24,000 to 26,000 years, depending on how you calculate it. But that's some heavy stuff, Jimmy. And so at its core, teaching people and understanding why they would be tracking astronomical movements is kind of a fun topic. And so I'd like to just, you know, start that conversation, since I know we have a limited amount of time tonight.
Sure.
By explaining to people that, you know, there are astronomical cycles that do have a physical effect on us, and the ancients knew this. We just take it for granted today. So let me give you an example. Cycle one is the Earth is spinning on its axis, and we don't really realize or think about the fact that just because of this spin, that causes day and night here on Earth. So this 24-hour cycle of the spin, as the Earth turns, we fall into the dark side of the planet, you lose consciousness and go to sleep. That's a physical effect based on an astronomical cycle. Cycle two, Earth's traveling around the sun. And as it goes around the sun, taking 365 days, what happens here on Earth? Seasons change. Animals migrate. Plants come and go. There's a whole physical change taking place because of the Earth's rotation around the sun. Well, it turns out there's a third cycle, and all the ancients knew this one just as well as they know those first two that I just told you and you are aware of as well. The third cycle seems to be possibly what's causing a rise and fall of civilization here on Earth, and it has to do with a much longer cycle that they tracked called precession. The current theory is that this has to do with like a lunar solar wobble, and it's affecting us, and they call this precession today. But there could be another theory out there that says that there was another sun, a failed star, and that we are in a locked binary orbit with two suns, and that this astronomical phenomenon is actually why we currently have precession, and is a much more interesting view and topic which is now being explored by institutions like the Binary Research Institute, my partner Walter Crutton, and many others who have looked at over 30 ancient cultures and see that this view, a dual sun understanding and a rise and fall of civilizations, dark ages, golden ages, a repeating time that happens this way, seems to be making much more sense from a historical perspective.
Well, now, is there something inside of our solar system, one of the 8 planets, 9 planets, 10 planets, whatever you know your planet count is, that could cause the precession? Has there been an accountability for this wobble?
Yes. Well, science today, you know, analyzes precession through a whole range of variables to try and explain motion and torque and why there's this, you know, wobble being displayed on the Earth, instead of looking at it from a different perspective that could involve gravity waves and some of the latest science, which points to the idea that there's possibly another sun, a failed star.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, these two interactions between that star and ours have moved the motion of the solar system, have caused other bodies to come and go, pull and tug. But a lot of these answers can be explained by including another star. What's interesting, Jimmy, too, is, you know, outside of the more of the technical aspects of explaining precession, at the base, just understanding of it, you know, the ancients were so smart, they basically just turned the heavens into a large celestial clock. We've all heard of the terms of the 12 houses of the zodiac. And so what essentially was happening was these 12 constellations that we've identified are little marks of time, just like the hands of a clock watch.
That's right.
That we move through. And so there's 12 constellations, and we every 2,000 years move through into a new view of one of these constellations, simply by the North Star that we currently point to. It's a better way to explain it. Every 2,000 years is changed to a new point in space that's pointing to a new constellation.
And right now we are moving into the age of Aquarius.
That's right. We just moved out of the age of Pisces and into the age of Aquarius. Now people hear these terms and like, well, what does that mean? Let me give you some physical analogies so that you understand the depths. And we can, again, we're still trying to figure out what does this mean. But so that you understand just that point alone, moving from Pisces to Aquarius.
Right.
If you think about the symbol of Pisces, it's a fish. And for the last 2,000 years, the predominant Christian view, symbolically through a fish, has been Jesus as the Savior. And that's been pretty much the dominant religion and overriding view is in the age of Pisces, is dominated by that type of a figure. Now, when we move into the age of Aquarius, you can see that there's an actual shift globally in how we view and process religious figures, religious views. That was the age of Aquarius, simply marked by the Mayans, also accurately saying, well, in 2012, our calendar is going to end. No, it's like an hour passing on the clock. It's just a system of time that marks one unit of measure has passed and ended, but another is starting. And the Mayans tracked that crossover of Pisces to Aquarius very accurately, amongst many other, almost 30 ancient cultures that we are now aware of, were using this astronomical system of time to watch and understand, which really gives us insight into thinking that, you know, wow, there was a time thousands of years ago where these same people that are teaching us about precession also documented that there were beings, whether it be in the Christian view that there were giants upon the earth,
right,
the Hebrew view that there were Nephilim that were coming down.
Right.
You can go into any culture and see that there are these references to these higher beings that also walked amongst man and were clearly documented. So that's where the fun discussion starts to begin, because we have science that we're learning from the ancients that we can validate. We have this other bag of information that we're still having trouble with our current sciences able to wrap our head around.
Well, one of the two fascinating things for our community that we talk about so often are the Baghdad Battery and the Dendera Bulb, two examples of which you have, and I have observed them myself. When we look at the Baghdad battery, all right, great. I know that it works. It creates electricity. It's fascinating to look at. It's a brilliant design. But where are the wires that were connected to it, and what did they use it for?
Well, you know, we have the opportunity to showcase some of these pieces of technology at some of the events and things that we do outside of just shows on the History Channel, like Ancient Aliens.
Right.
There's shows like, you know, Alien Snowfest or Contact in the Desert. Next weekend, I'll be appearing at Alien Con in Pasadena.
That's right, at the Pasadena Convention Center.
Right, and then we're going to have a little museum set up there under guard, of course, but you'll be able to actually see. I'm going to be bringing the replica that I have of a Dendera light bulb that physically works, a Baghdad battery or two. Again, these are replicas. But the idea is that this is actual, you know, representation of artifacts that exist that show ancient man, even when we're talking about the Baghdad battery and the Dendera bulb. These are basic level technology, like us having access to electricity and light bulbs. That's at a very base level core. We have, you know, neuron scanning machines and, you know, 3D printing things and VR. So the Egyptians and you know, ancient Sumer, showing that they had, again, baseline things like the Baghdad battery or a Dendera bulb, that's not the highlight, though, right? That's where the discussion begins, is a baseline, because it goes much deeper, and that's where it becomes fascinating to expose the fact that the technology that we think we have today, even wireless technology and such, has been around for thousands of years.
Maybe the Baghdad battery was used to light up the Dendera light bulb. Hey.
I think you're onto something there, Jimmy. Definitely when we look at all these recesses of crypts and tombs across Egypt and various other sites, there's no evidence of soot, no evidence of flame having been ignited. And so how do they light the way? Literally in this one crypt in Egypt, they show you on the wall. It's literally the light-giving source is the understanding of this crypt's meaning. On the wall, they're holding up large light bulbs plugged into some type of what looks like a generator. Now, Egyptologists look at this large light bulb and say, no, this is the lotus flower. And that bulb is just the aroma coming out of the lotus flower.
Right.
It's a light bulb, folks. And anyone who looks at it that's 6 years or older on Google Images and types in Dendera will say light bulb, not lotus flower.
What is amazing to me, I have gone through a couple of actual tombs that were moved over here to New York, and you go through the real tomb, and you look at the ceiling, you look at the walls, and you look at the hieroglyphs, and you're looking at the intricate carving and reliefs and the painting, and you're just thinking, how did they get this done? They didn't do it by candlelight. They didn't do it by oil lamp. It would all be damaged, right? You would see evidence of it everywhere, and clearly there is nothing. It was well lit and done, and they had the technology to do it. And I'm okay with that, Jason.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Jimmy, because, again, the time frames are what really come into question. If the Egyptians built and managed all of these complex structures 2500 BC, going back to the first dynastic pyramids of first dynastic pharaohs of Egypt, Akhenaten and such, you don't have a time frame of reference for in those later time periods to see that they had this advanced understanding. It was like a gradual decline, meaning the first pharaohs, Akhenaten's time frame and such, that's where you see the brilliance of some of these statues, the Ramses statues and various things, where the math and the science to carve and make these monuments is just too articulate. And then it slowly, gradually goes downhill as you get closer to our time frame, as if they were losing the knowledge. And this falls into alignment again with this cycle of time, where a lot of these sites, Göbekli Tepe, others, even Easter Island, the, you know, remotest part of the world, Rapa Nui, we see this knowledge of architecture and building that was taught by some lost race. And maybe they were extraterrestrial, but the point was they were ubiquitous across the globe, teaching all cultures of math, science, and architecture. that we see across continents share today. It was all influenced by some lost race that we're still trying to discover, and we're getting closer and closer with shows like Ancient Aliens, constantly sending our buddy Giorgio on an unbelievable, crazy schedule of exploration to some of these very remote sites, documenting these things and finding stuff, Bata Valley in Indonesia. A lot of new sites are picking up that torch and saying, wow, there's influence here by some lost race. They called them gods, but maybe they weren't exactly gods with our understanding of the science today.
What are the dates for AlienCon?
Let's see. AlienCon is next weekend, Friday through Sunday. So I believe that's the 15th through the 18th.
Well, I know yeah, and as you, you know what, I don't care. I'll just say it. Giorgio is in the South Pacific. He just left. We were with him all weekend. But he's out there filming in the South Pacific, and as soon as he comes back, he's picking up more Ancient Aliens and heading over to AlienCon with you. You guys are going to have an amazing time. Probably 20, 30, 40,000 fans are going to be converging on Pasadena. Oh, wow. So have a great time.
Thanks, Jimmy. We look forward to it, and as always, it's great to have a forum like this to discuss, whether it be groundbreaking or news-breaking topics, to come on your show and be able to have your audience to bounce these ideas off of.
Thank you so much, Jason. Be safe and be well, and give my best to Taylor.
Thanks, buddy. Love you. Talk to you soon.
Right back at you. Jason Martell. This is Coast to Coast AM. I am your host, Jimmy Church. We'll be right back. Open lines are next. Stay with me.